Hi, this is Ben Rosario, and you are listening to the Run to the Top podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to or welcome back to the Run to the Top podcast. I'm your host, Coach Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner. And what we do here is bring on some of the most interesting people in the running scene with the goal of helping you become a better runner each week. Today's guest is the head coach of the Northern Arizona Elite, Ben Rosario. Ben's athletes have been wildly successful in recent years, with the most notable being Alafin Taliamuk's win at the 2020 U.S. Olympic Trials. Also in the top 10 of that race were his athletes Stephanie Bruce and Kellen Taylor, while on the men's side, Scott Faubel, a 209 marathoner, came in 12th. Like many coaches, Ben started out as an accomplished runner himself, a member of the Hanson's Brooks team, and competing in the Olympic trials twice before turning to coaching full-time. Real quick, before we get into our conversation, if you've been listening to the show this fall, you know that I've been begging each and every week for your reviews on iTunes. It makes a huge difference when new listeners see five-star reviews and ratings, and it's a quick way to support the Run to the Top. I've got this big, crazy goal of reaching 1,000 reviews by the end of 2020, and I don't know if I'll get there, but I promised I'd keep asking until we either get there or the year runs out. So if you are not on the run right now, head on over to iTunes and tell the world what you think. If you email me a screenshot to claire@runnersconnect.net, you'll be entered to win a free month of custom coaching from the experts at Runners Connect. We're in the home stretch now, so please get your review in soon. I'll shout out some of my favorites at the end of the show. Now, if you listened to last week's show with Matt Hart, the author of The Tell All, about the scandal with the Nike Oregon project, you might be tempted to think that that's the way all teams probably act at the highest levels. I like to consider myself an optimist, but I can't help be a cynic at the same time. So when Ben Rosario of NAS came on the show, I had to ask him about his thoughts, and you'll hear what he had to say about his team, their sponsor, and specifically how the women athletes are treated. As you may know, his athlete, Olympic trials champ Alafin Taliamuk, has just announced that she is pregnant and due in January. As a mom myself, I ask Ben all about how the amazing moms and moms-to-be are treated on the team, and how that differs from what has happened in the past with other groups. We also get into his training philosophies and the specific work that he had his athletes do that help make them some of the best in the world. We recorded this the week before many on his team prepared to race the Marathon Project just this past Sunday, December 20th. And if you didn't catch that, I'll share the results at the end of the show. Ben is refreshingly honest, frank, and opinionated, and I think you'll like this conversation as much as I did. And now, here's head coach and executive director of the Northern Arizona Elite, Ben Rosario. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Ben.
Thank you for having me. The listeners don't know this, but I was delayed, and you were nice enough to wait, so I appreciate that.
Well, of course, of course. I would love to talk about this crazy year. 2020 has been pretty crazy for everybody in the world, but specifically for the team you lead, Northern Arizona Elite. I'd love to go back in time to February when you were getting ready for the Olympic marathon trials in Atlanta. Can you take us back there and kind of recap what you were thinking?
Going into the race, we were just very confident. I remember being pretty excited, obviously, but in a really confident way. I felt good about our preparations and our athletes. And when we got to Atlanta, it just felt right. It felt like it was going to be a special day for us.
a pretty tough course with all the hills. Was obviously that was not a problem for at least your female athletes for sure.
Yeah, we handled the hills really well. We had prepared for that course very specifically. And I felt going in like the course was going to be an advantage for us.
Well, it certainly was. Your athlete, as we all know, Alefin Tuliyomik, won the women's race and was planning on going to Tokyo when the world completely shut down. What was that like as her coach?
It was tough. I felt bad for her. You know, I felt bad for humanity,
sure.
First and foremost, but I think you can do both. You know, you can see the bigger picture and understand the context of what's going on and yet still feel empathy for someone like Alefin, who accomplished this huge goal and was looking forward to the Olympics, and then it's gone. And that's tough to deal with. But she was such a professional about it. And even though she was disappointed, I think she was able to also step back and see the bigger picture and move on. And of course, as we know, she's moving on in a pretty cool way. As you know, she announced that she was pregnant last week and actually due next month. And it was all very calculated, which is like her. And she'll be ready to go in Tokyo in the summertime.
Yeah, I would love to talk to you about that. As her coach, I'm sure she came to you and said, "Hey, Ben, this is what I'm going to do." Or what was that conversation like?
She's a very open lady. So she told me once the Olympics were out of the picture and the writing was on the wall that the fall marathons were going to be out of the picture, she pretty much told me that her and Tim were going to try. And kind of told me the plan, which was that they weren't going to try very long because of the Olympics. And it was basically either, hey, it happens now or we wait. And a few weeks later, she called and it happened. So that it was pretty much as simple as that.
How tough was keeping that secret?
I mean, it was kind of tough because everybody loves Alefin. And so when I was doing interviews, people would ask me because they knew Steph and Kellen were racing and, you know, all of our other athletes. And, you know, they would say, well, how's Alefin doing? Or, you know, is she going to race? Or is she running the marathon? Or, you know, what's her next goal? How's she getting ready? And I just kind of had to sort of deflect. And that's not fun. I don't want to lie to anyone. And I never lied. I just kind of, like I said, deflected, you know, so. But I'm glad it's out now. And I'm glad for her too, that it's out, because I think it was, she likes to be very open with her fans, and I don't think she necessarily liked keeping it from them. But then again, I don't think she was quite ready to tell them yet either. So it was a tough, emotional thing to juggle, but, it's out now, and the ladies had a little virtual baby shower for her yesterday or over the weekend, I guess it was. And, you know, it's going to be great.
Yeah, well, you are quite experienced in elite mom runners. several women on your team are moms and are still just killing it. I would love to talk about, so Kellen Taylor, Stephanie Bruce. I would love to talk about Stephanie for a minute. She is almost 37 years old and still getting PRs in the 10K. How is that possible?
Yeah, I think what we're learning is that women can run really well into their mid to late 30s. And we're learning that from not only Steph, but Shalane, Dez, Kellen, Molly, all kinds of women in the U.S. and beyond are showing that in distance running, women can keep getting better. And I think the reason is, you know, as opposed to men who, you know, their testosterone levels begin to go down, their metabolism really slows in their 30s, and these things are detrimental to them. Those things aren't as big of a factor for women. Testosterone was not really a part of what made them good in the first place. And so your aerobic system can keep getting better. And that's really the key to improved performance. So as long as the women are working hard in the weight room, keeping their muscles and tendons and ligaments strong, working on that part of their game, if you will, they can keep getting better. Now, eventually, Father Time will catch up and their muscles and tendons and ligaments will begin to have little troubles and age, I guess. But I think other than that, they can go strong all the way into their mid to late 30s. And again, we're getting tons of examples.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you get an example like that, you kind of believe that you can do it yourself. You know, I mean, it didn't used to be so long ago that mid-30s was old for a runner, but now that's not the case, and I think maybe has something to do with belief, too. We're seeing all these new great examples.
Yeah, belief and understanding of physiology, and it's happening across all kinds of sports. And it's not like men are toast at 30 either. I think men across all kinds of sports are understanding how to use the weight room and stay healthy longer and prolong their careers. And yeah, it's great to see, because you hate to see people's careers cut short, you know, 30, 31 years old. It just seems so unfortunate. So yeah, I'm happy that we're learning so much and that athletes are taking advantage of these opportunities.
Yeah. And, you know, especially I want to keep going back to the women, because you just have been coaching some really great ones, obviously. And American women are kind of seeing a resurgence in endurance running. And, you know, the men, American men, maybe not so much. But do you want to talk about that?
I mean, I would disagree. I think the American men are doing very well. But, I mean, you know, we're winning medals globally. We're competing at World Marathon Majors. We're finishing in the top 10. We have an athlete on our team that's finished in the top 10 at Boston and New York, and has run 209 and been a factor at Boston. But anyway, in regards to the women, I think the women are just getting deeper. You know, it's not uncommon for U.S. women to be up at the top of the world stage. Obviously, Dina Castor was an Olympic medalist and a World Marathon Major winner. You know, back before her, Lynn Jennings was a world cross country champion three times over. We've had great women. We just have a lot of them right now. And that's, I think, what the difference is. And that's really cool. We've got Shalane winning a World Marathon Major. We've got Des winning a World Marathon Major. We've got, you know, Molly Huddle is world class. Emily Sisson's world class. Emily Infeld's a medalist on the track. And the list goes on and on and on, and doesn't appear to be slowing anytime soon. So I'm as excited as anyone about what U.S. women's distance running has become.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did want to talk to you about, you know, how women are treated in this sport. And we've all heard about, you know, the crazy things with the Nike Oregon Project and, you know, how Kara Goucher was treated when she was pregnant. I don't think that it's going to be the same story with Hoka. I would love to have you share what you could say about how Hoka supports its female athletes.
They've always treated them great. You know, that was a very unfortunate situation last year when a lot of those things were coming out that you're referring to, because I think some faction of fans and media perhaps sort of thought that that was across the board. But those were isolated incidents. I mean, you know, Steph was pregnant when she joined the team. I've coached Steph through two pregnancies, and Hoka you know, was on board with her second pregnancy and happy for her and sent her nothing but love and congrats. And you know, there was no pressure on her to perform or to come back quickly. That was never even a thought or an issue for us at all. And it continues not to be. And in fact, it's just the opposite. You can see that the brand is celebrating Alafine and her baby and her pregnancy. And they made a wonderful video. And I could just tell you on a personal level, they're thrilled for her. There was two Hoka employees on her virtual baby shower over the weekend, and they're great. And yeah, everybody's just totally jazzed for her. That it's a company that realizes when you're a brand ambassador, it's about more than just performance. And the way that Alafine has shared her journey with her fans and the running public ever since really she joined the team, but particularly since she won the trials, everybody's just pulling for her. And the positive response, I think, justifies, just from a cold hard business sense, how Hoka has handled it, because it's been super positive.
Yeah.
And so you kind of realize that not only, again, the things you were referring to earlier, not only is that a bad way to treat people, but it's a poor business move too, on top
of that.
So, we're happy actually we're thrilled with Hoka and everything that they've done for us and recently how they've handled Alafine's announcement. It's been awesome.
That's great. Because I think you are right. I think that when all of that came out about the Oregon Project, that, you know, we thought as fans, oh, this is the way they're all treated. But it's great to hear that that's not the case. That's great.
And I don't think it's just Hoka. I think there were other brands that were kind of bummed about that, too, because I don't think they were treating their athletes that way either. I mean, I'm not going to go through each brand and what each brand does, but I can tell you it was not as widespread as perhaps it seemed.
Good to know. Definitely good to know. Well, whenever I get a coach on, I love to talk about coaching advice to hopefully help someone who's listening become a better runner. So do you have different training approaches for the kids who come straight out of college than you do for your veteran elite runners?
I think so. Everybody's an individual, right? So some people are coming out of college really seasoned, having trained at a very high level, programs that are really, really tough and require quite a bit of you physically and mentally. Other folks are coming out, maybe they were the best person on their team and weren't challenged in practice on a daily basis like some of the others. And so you have to assess each person as an individual. But I think in general, my goal anyway is to keep people around here for a really long time. So we're definitely taking a long-term approach, and we're not trying to necessarily throw everything at them right away. We're trying to slowly add pieces over time. And you see that with the folks who have stayed with us for a long time, just getting better and better and better and better. And that's what we want. We want those people to take a long-term approach to their career, because if you can stay healthy, as we talked about, that aerobic system just gets better and better, and it gets you get stronger and stronger, and you can perform at a higher and higher level.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about a little bit more detailed about the training advice. So, you know, most runners get the advice, hard days are hard, easy days easy. But then you throw in some medium days. I think that's where a lot of recreational runners kind of trip up, is those medium days. Can you talk about those and what they're for and how you use them?
Well, we call it practice for a reason, right? So it's the same reason that basketball players shoot free throw after free throw after free throw and layup after layup after layup. You want it to become second nature. And so a lot of your hard workouts really should be in that zone that you spend most of your race performing inside of, which is that sort of comfortably uncomfortable zone where, yeah, you're running pretty fast, but you're still relaxed. You don't really get to that super uncomfortable part until the last quarter of the race. And yet, in the past, I think we've spent so much time focusing on that sort of effort and maybe not enough time in that zone that's a little more comfortable and that you can spend more time in practice. So to use your parlance, medium, right? So, you know, instead of, I'll just make something up, right? Instead of 5x800, a really fast pace where you have to take a good bit of time in between and you're on your hands and knees after the last one, why not do 10x800 at a slower pace with shorter rest and really work on that medium kind of zone? So maybe you're doing 10x800 at a pace that you could run for 35 minutes in a race, something right around there, with a minute rest. That's not as quote unquote hard as 5x800 at 15 minute pace. But what do you get out of it? Well, you get more volume, right? You can recover faster from it. So you can come back with another hard workout, you know, a couple of days later, a little bit easier. And you got to spend a lot more time in that zone that you're actually going to spend more time inside the race. So there's way more bang for your buck for these workouts that are a little slower per repeat, but more volume overall. And I would really recommend those types of sessions to anybody at any level.
Yeah, that's good advice. Because so many people just, you know, when they're new to running or new to speed work, they just, you know, you give them the 800 workout and they just run as fast as they can.
Yeah.
Right. And they're like, well, I could go faster, coach. And you don't always have to run your hardest, right?
Well, and think about this too. Again, it's practice. So if they take that 800 workout and they run their first one too fast, their second one just slightly slower, and then they get slower as they go, well, then you're practicing to do that in the race. What you should be doing is the opposite. If anything, you should be starting off on the conservative side and slightly getting faster as you go, because that's how to run your best race. And that's proven over time at every level. and we should be practicing how we want to run the race.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. So you're also a big fan of high mileage, and I want to know what that means to you, because, you know, as runners, we all want to run as much as possible, but clearly there's a point when high is too high. So what is that point? Obviously it's individual, but how does somebody know what is high for them, and where's that sweet spot?
Well, I don't know how big of a fan I am of high mileage. I don't think we actually do as much mileage as some other professional programs. Okay. You know, our top athletes or our most gifted athletes aerobically are running over 100 miles a week, but they're very rarely running 120. We're mostly living in that 100 to 110 range, which might sound like a lot, but it's actually not that crazy for the pros. But the reason is I want us to be able to hit the hard workouts. You know, that's my biggest thing. That's where I think we get the most bang for our buck, is on the hard days. And it's no different for anybody. You know, so what we're looking for is that sweet spot, as you call it, where you can handle X amount of mileage per week and handle the intensity that we're asking for from the workouts.
Right.
And if that's 60 miles a week with a day off every week, that's great. If that's 75, that's great. If that's 40, that's great. Because I'm talking about across the spectrum, no matter who you are. What you don't want is to become a slave to the mileage, where you feel like this number is so important.
Right.
I have to be getting 60, or I have to be getting 70 or 100 or whatever it might be for you. It's arbitrary. It's arbitrary. I think it's more about, and you know, you got to take life into consideration too.
Sure.
What's your life like? What kind of time do you have each day and each week? And you need to be able to consistently stay at that mileage for 3-4 weeks at a time. Then you need to kind of take a down week and recharge a little bit, then go back to it. And you need to do that throughout the segment so that you're fresh and ready to go on race day. So there's a whole lot of factors, but I would just say, if you're so tired that you're not hitting your workouts, then you're doing either too much mileage or you're running too fast on your easy days, one of the two. So figure it out for yourself, but you got to pull back until you get to that point where you can put together consistent weeks, one after the other. That's what will end up producing great results.
Good advice. So besides your athletes this year, we've seen so many world record breaking performances, and it seems counterintuitive because there aren't as many races. The world is not normal. People can't train the way they normally do, at least for some people. What do you attribute that to? What's going on?
I think people are just laser focused.
Yeah.
Running, we're so fortunate, right? We're incredibly fortunate in that it's an outdoor sport where we're really not inhibited in any way from doing our running. We can go out and we can run and we can do it safely. And when you talk about the professional athletes at the world level, maybe it's a good thing they're not traveling all over the world doing all these races. They're just training and training and training and training uninterrupted for weeks on end, and they're just as fit as they've ever been. Plus, this is kind of a weird thing, but they're not getting sick, you know?
Right.
Because they're staying indoors, they're quarantining, they're wearing their masks. They're so diligent about not getting COVID-19 that they're not getting anything. So, they're not having any interruptions in training. And I think uninterrupted training leads to great performances for anybody at any level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure the cynics would say it's the shoes, or they would say there's not enough drug tests in COVID. What do you say about those kind of things?
Oh, well, I don't know. I can't dissect every single record and performance that's been set. Look, there's always going to be a dark side to endurance sports, and it's the worst part of it for sure. And it makes me sick to my stomach, but, you know, I try to focus on the good, and some of these things are certainly a result of good, clean, hard work. And, you know, the shoe technology is perhaps a whole nother topic, but, you know, it has gotten better. No question.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to certainly see continued efforts to, if not regulate, certainly examine where we're at so that so that the playing field is as fair as possible. I don't have all the answers and it's a fluid situation, but I don't want it to be a free for all. And I'm glad that we've at least had some regulations as of late. And, you know, we'll see how that all ends up. But all we can do is worry about ourselves here. And, you know, that's my biggest focus.
Yeah. Yeah. So regulations on the shoes, like, you know, them being available to the public, or everybody has, you know, there's a stack height, all of that kind of stuff. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Look, the sport has a side to it now that is very technological. Mm-hmm. And so does golf, and so does swimming, and so does baseball, right? And every sport almost. And so, like all of those other sports, we need to make sure that the playing field is fair. You know, in golf, you can't just use any club. There's length regulations. There's weight regulations. There's all sorts of the head size regulations, all these with the drivers, right? And in swimming, you know, they had the full body suits.
Sure.
And then they said, hey, this is getting out of control. It's becoming all about the suit and not about the athlete. So we're doing away with these full body suits, right? And they pulled back. And they reset everything. And there's no rule that says we can't reset everything as well. But I do cut them some slack because everything's happening so fast that I think they're having trouble keeping up with all of it. And again, look, the goal is just an even playing field, and I think we can achieve it. I don't have all the answers, but I certainly don't want to see a total free for all where it's about the shoes and not the athlete. I want to see the athletes determining who wins the race.
Absolutely. So what's next for you and your athletes? How do you predict the world is going to change next year?
It certainly seems like we're headed in the right direction.
Hope so.
The vaccines have begun being doled out, and rightly so, they're being sent to frontline workers. And then my understanding is that the elderly and the vulnerable are next, which seems totally right to me, with a capital R. And then eventually we'll go down from there, and hopefully everybody will be vaccinated and we'll be living in an environment that's much more normal, quote unquote. I don't know how long that's going to take. I think that our team is very focused on this weekend and then a little break, because it is stressful to have to be so, I'm not going to say diligent, because we should be doing that anyway.
Right.
But it's just, you know, it's just it's an extra weight on everybody's shoulders, right? And so to have a little bit of a break here after this marathon and say, hey, we'll see you back in January, will be nice. And I'm not expecting everybody to go out and all of a sudden break all the guidelines, but I just think they can let their shoulders down for a second and just lounge around for a few days. I think that'll be nice, because we've been working really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of the marathon this weekend, this will probably air after that event, but I would love to have you handicap it a little bit. Tell us who's all racing and what do you predict?
That's a lot of pressure, since it's coming.
Yeah.
This is coming out after. You know, I'm just happy that the athletes are going to have a chance to run. The way I've been describing this to people is, you know, professional running is an industry, right? And our industry has been hit very, very hard.
Sure.
Think about the race management companies. Think about the races themselves, event directors. Those people have taken an enormous hit. And then think about the athletes who, at the top level, have had to miss out on these major marathons, where they typically get appearance fees. And then on top of that, they make prize money. And then on top of that, they make bonus money from their sponsors. And all we're trying to do is stay afloat here, just like businesses of all kinds, you know? And so my biggest thing is that I'm happy that all these athletes, not just my own, are getting a chance to compete and get some of that financial reward that they missed out on earlier in the year. That's really important. And doing it in a safe way is really important. I mean, everybody's being tested twice before they race, and that's the athletes. And then the key staff members and volunteers are being tested. VIPs that are coming in, media are being tested. Anybody that's going to be anywhere near the athletes in a stationary setting, they're getting tested. And those aren't guidelines that we have to follow. Those are our own guidelines. And I just want to put that out there. But as far as my predictions for the race, I think it's going to be really fast on both sides, the men and the women. We've got some excellent pacers that are really excited about being here and helping these folks out. And it's set up to be fast. It kind of reminds me of some of the races in Japan where, you know, the whole goal is to just get a critical mass out there running as hard as they can. And I guess sort of only the strong will survive. But I would expect the men's race to go under 210 and the women's race will probably go under 223. And those will be some of the fastest times, you know, that you'll ever see here in the United States or that we've seen here in the United States, particularly from American athletes. Now, we have a lot of international athletes as well. So I don't know if Americans are going to win on both sides, but it's going to be a big day for American distance running. And then I'm very excited about the Canadian athletes, the Mexican athletes who have an opportunity to make their respective Olympic teams on Sunday. And then we have a smattering of athletes from, I mean, I'm just looking at my list here, Ireland, the UK, Eritrea, Ukraine, France, Libya, Romania, Greece, Puerto Rico. So we have all these kind of different countries represented. And that was very important to us to have an international flavor, even though those people aren't coming from those countries. They've been here in the United States or in North America. And I don't know. I just want to see a great race. I'd love to see a battle to the finish and, you know, on both sides, a classic dogfight.
Yeah. How many people are in the field? Like how many participants?
Well, we tried to have 50 men and 50 women.
Okay.
So what we did was we allowed a few more than that into the field, expecting some attrition, which we've had on the women's side. I think we're a little under 50 now on the women's side, but we have 10 pacers. So we'll have over 50 people on the line. And then on the men's side, I think we're a little over 50, but we only have 4 pacers. So give or take, you know, there'll be about 60 on both sides and about 120 athletes overall. And I think that's a good size for this type of race. I really do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we will be excited to see how it turns out. I have a few more questions for you, some questions that I ask everyone. And if you could go back and talk to yourself when you first started running, what advice would you give yourself?
I would say to myself in high school that once I fell in love with the sport, I almost fell too in love. You know, and I should have taken a step back and seen the bigger picture. I was so obsessed with running that it was borderline unhealthy. You know, certainly didn't do me any favors in school. Certainly didn't do me any favors with a few relationships. And you know, my relationship with running was so it ran so deep that it was. You know, I just think it actually hurt my performance, caring so much about it and overthinking so many different things. And I wish I could have stepped back and had the confidence that I have now with how I run my business and just my life in general. I think that would have helped me back then.
Interesting. What is the greatest gift that running has given you?
Everything, you know, my running has given me everything. My livelihood is from running. I met my wife on the cross country team in college. Mm-hmm. All the good things in my life have come from running. So I couldn't even begin to give you a list. It's too long.
That's great. And finally, Ben, where can listeners connect with you?
Well, certainly we're very open on social media on our team, Hoka NAZ Elite. So if you follow us at NAZ underscore Elite on Twitter or Instagram. You can follow me at Ben Rosario 1 on Twitter, at Coach Ben Rosario on Instagram. And I think that if you do follow the team, you'll see that we're pretty easy to follow because everybody's just putting themselves out there all the time. So that's what I would encourage you is to follow the team. And then when you do that, you'll end up following all the athletes and hopefully kind of become a big fan.
Yeah, you guys are, I do have to say, your social media game is pretty strong. All of the athletes, I follow them, and they're just really good, inspiring stuff. So I don't know if you have anything to do with that, but whatever they're doing, keep it up.
Thank you. Yeah, we understand that that's a part of the business, but we try to do it in a fun way. And mm-hmm. our whole strategy is to make sure that the athletes are enjoying it, because if they're not enjoying it, then it's not going to come off the way we want it to come off. You know, if somebody's kind of a goofball and quirky and funny, then that's what we want them to be on social. If right. somebody's a huge running nerd and they love the stats and all that stuff, then they should share all that stuff. And if somebody's, you know, a mom like Steph and likes sharing, you know, some of her funny family stories, then she should do that. We're not all robots, you know?
Right. And you're people too.
We're people too. And we have a guy from NAU, the president of the running club there, who's been kind of following us around this winter a little bit. And I asked him the other day, what's the biggest thing he's learned coming to these workouts? And he said, oh, I've just learned that they're just regular people. Like, yes, totally. So that's just all we are. You know, we're just trying to do our best.
Well, I think that's a perfect spot to end it. Thank you so much, Ben, for coming on the show. And I wish you best of luck this weekend for your athletes.
Thank you, Claire. I really appreciate it. And it was fun. Thanks for having me on.
So as Ben mentioned at the beginning of our talk, he was a little late to our scheduled interview, but he was super apologetic and gracious about it. He said he was working with a new assistant coach and things went a little longer than anticipated. But honestly, I can't believe that he found a way to make time for a podcast recording during such a huge race week for his athletes. I found Ben to be no nonsense and direct, which I really relate to, perhaps because we are both originally Midwesterners. I don't know. For example, when I asked him about why the American women were so good lately and not so much the men, he was quick to point out that some of the American men, like his athlete Scott Fabel, are still highly competitive on the world stage. A good coach defends and elevates all the athletes he or she coaches, and Ben wasn't letting me forget that he's got a team deep with talent on both sides. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this past Sunday was the Marathon Project, and Ben and I recorded our conversation before that race. In case you didn't follow it, it was certainly as fast as Ben predicted, with 12 women going under 2:30 and 7 men going under 2:10. Sarah Hall led the women, becoming the second fastest American woman marathoner in 2:20:32. Ben's athlete, Kellen Taylor, went out with Sarah at a hot pace, and she came through the half in a personal best, but ultimately faded to fourth. On the men's side, medical student Martin Hahir broke the tape in 2:08:59, and NAS athletes Scott Fabel and Scott Smith were fourth and sixth, respectively, both coming in at 2:09 and change. As 2020 thankfully winds to a close, my push to get 1,000 reviews on iTunes will also wind down officially, but that doesn't mean you can't write a review right now or in 2021 if you haven't already. Besides it making our show look good to attract more listeners and better guests, it's a great way to let us know your feedback and what you want to hear. One recent reviewer, Brad06, mentioned that I should have legendary Olympian and running coach Jeff Galloway on the show. Well, Brad06, you'll get your wish soon, because I just interviewed Jeff last week and it was a fantastic conversation. Who do you want to hear from? Let me know by emailing me at claire@runnersconnect.com, or even better, put your request in your iTunes review. I read every single one and I will announce our contest winner next week on the show. If you want to get an extra entry and get the scoop first, sign up for The Elite Treatment, my weekly newsletter that comes out each Friday. Sign up at runnersconnect.net/podcast to get it in your inbox. That's it for the Run to the Top for this week. I'm your host, Coach Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner, wishing you a safe and happy holiday season. Have a great run today.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.